You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Hot August night and the leaves hanging down and the grass on the ground smelling sweet. Town and the sound of that good gospel beat. Sits a ragged tent where there ain't no trees, and that gospel group telling you and me it's love for the love's sake, the love's travel and salvation show. Pick up the babies and grab the old.
I don't know exactly how many of those old-fashioned Southern tent revivals Neil Diamond has attended, but he gets pretty close to describing what one is really like with that song. Good song for a hot Sunday night in August, and that is, in fact, the opening words of that particular tune, and it is a hot August night here, this seventh day of August, 2021. James Edwards and Keith Alexander, this is the Political Cesspool, and here we go again.
Well, you know, there's a Memphis connection to that song. Did you know that, James?
I know, and you're going to say it's Chip's...
Chip's Moman.
We say this every time, I think, we bring up...
well, look, you can tell by the music. That is his 827 Thomas Street Band, his local, recording band. They're the same band that did all the background music in Elvis's 68 comeback album. So... they were, I mean, you talk about a hit machine. That particular studio in Chip's Moman had hits for everybody from the Box Tops to Neil Diamond to Jackie DeShannon to, Elvis. You know, everybody went to him to get a hit record. And in the late 60s through the mid 70s, he had the Midas touch.
Well, I like that song because, again, it brings back some memories of these old revivals we would go to at our church. And I don't know what it was about a revival, but they would only be held on the hottest week of the year. It was like when you get together in late July or early August, it was always in the I guess it made you feel closer to hell.
You'd always hear the cicadas or the crickets in the background.
You would cook is what you would do. And so that's we were at one revival, and I remember – Dad's here tonight. My dad's here tonight with us, and he just got out of a little hospital stay, so he's coming in to check in with us, and he never misses a show, so we're happy to have him here tonight. But me and him and my mom and my brother, we were at the revival at the church we had this year. This was years ago. I was a teenager, I guess. We went out to IHOP with my pastor and the pastor who was brought in as the guest to preach the revival. And it was just like in this song. I mean, it was the whole setting, the whole everything. If you listen to all of the verses of this song, it just reminded me of what those things were really like. But the guy who preached the revival wasn't our normal pastor. You would bring in special people for revival sometimes. His name was Donnie Guy. And I never met him before and have never seen him since. But we were eating at IHOP, and he said something that I still remember to this day. He said, the Christian faith isn't about giving you fire insurance. It's about giving you life insurance. So think about that and wrap your mind around that and decipher that, if you will, but it makes sense to me. Also, you know, it's a beautiful way of life, though. Southern revivals, the Southern faith, the Christian faith of the South. We were visiting graves in Pontotoc, Mississippi, where my mom's side of the family's from, and there was a sign. I think I've told this story before. There was a sign at the little grocery store there. It said, revival this week in the pasture next to the gas station. We didn't have to worry which gas station they meant because there's only one in the whole town. So it was just, it's a beautiful way of life. It's something that we are here to...
Fundamentalism.
Hold on, your mic, Keith, is something's up with it. I don't know. Try now.
Okay, Here, I'll hold this up.
Yeah, hold it up, and we might have to switch out.
I have to become a TV antenna. In order. But in the South, fundamentalism was big because the South was the frontier, and in the frontier, you didn't have a lot of, clergy from mainline Protestants or Roman Catholics. They just didn't have enough of them. So that's why you hear the pastor being called. There was a Galatarian. So they just call somebody who seemed to have a lot of biblical knowledge to be their pastor. So that's why you called your pastor brother rather than father.
Yeah,
in
we did.
Fundamentalist
that was just our pastor was called Brother David, and everybody was a brother, but he was, you know, certainly
he was
brother
first,
with a capital B,
first among equals.
That's right. Well, in any event, let's tell you what's coming up tonight. Why don't you? We have our featured guest this evening is going to be Neil Kumar. Coming up in the second hour, he is a Republican candidate for the United States Congress out of Arkansas. He's a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans and the Sons of the American Revolution with blood that has been Southern since the 17th century. And he just launched his campaign a couple of weeks ago, and the bad guys are already out to get him. So we're going to be talking with Neil in the second hour about what would lead him as a young law student to launch a campaign for the United States Congress, who he's running against, what he's running for. We're going to introduce you to Neil Kumar tonight. Great article on Neil, about Neil, at vdare.com this week. And I've been in touch with Neil for a couple of years, so I had the advanced knowledge of knowing he was going to be running. So anyway, another first-time guest. We certainly had the guest last week, Larry Ray Hardin, the former DEA agent, Charles Balsman, a few weeks ago. So we're introducing you to some new
cast
folks.
Of characters.
That's right. In addition to all of your favorites. I mean, it's just like a band that comes out with a great new album. We still play all the hits, of course, but and all the old favorites, and we always will. And we love our rotation, but it's always fun and indeed a novelty to be able to put in some new
Well, we need some new blood every once in a while, and we want to introduce you to the best thinkers that we can lay our hands on our issues and from our viewpoint politically. And I think you've been doing a great job, James. We've really got a,
I like the balance. I like again, I mean, you're always going to be hearing from, well, we got this letter here just signed by an activist. He kept his name to himself, and that's okay. He writes, great program on the Bill Regnery tribute. Of course, that was a couple of weeks ago now, 3 or 4 weeks ago now, with Jared Taylor, Kevin McDonald, and Sam Dixon. Of course, all of them, each of them are mainstays, and we will always continue to have people like that on. This listener writes, here's a contribution to support your First Amendment rights. Thanks for being out there. Well, thank you for being out there. Also to Jim in Nebraska this week, sending in a generous contribution this week as well, as so many of you do, and all of this correspondence. But yes, I mean, we're always going to have people like Jared and Kevin and Sam on, but it is fun to have some
people. We're not frozen
in
time. We are there. We do want some new blood and young Turks in occasionally, like our featured guest tonight, Neil Kumar.
Absolutely, Keith. And I'll tell you, you need new blood, because I was astonished when I was going through my to add Neil Kumar to my contact list in my phone. I was scrolling through my phone today, and I was just shocked to see all of the names of people. Once you get in my phone, you don't get out. It's like the mob. you get it. I don't delete a contact, but a lot of great men in there who have passed away, whose phone numbers are still in my phone. Bill Regnery, Willis Cardo, Bob Whitaker, Drew Lackey, Gordon Baum, Joe Sobrin, Hutton Gibson, Sonny Landham, Bill Rowland, of course. I mean, they're all still in the phone. And certainly not forgotten. So it's
gone, but not forgotten.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to kick off the show in earnest. Stay tuned.
Dad, can you make him stop?
Honey, he needs to practice.
He's been at it an hour.
Well, just trying to be patient.
Dad, it sounds like a cat calling for help or something.
Worse, a basement full of cats.
Yeah.
You know, hon, it is a little hard on the ears.
Not you, too.
Well, maybe we can all play a game. Andrew, do you want to play a board game? How about we watch a video? Hide and seek? Oh, I don't know, I give up.
Maybe we could all just sneak out of the house.
Honey, he's 9 years old. We can't leave him home alone.
Man.
We can make him practice with a sock.
Well, I guess we'll have to get some ice cream.
Did I hear someone say ice cream?
Family, isn't it about time?
Oh, I see the practice hasn't hurt your ears.
Well, I'm a serious musician.
Funny that you never seem to get better on that thing.
Works every time.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, where'd all these cats come from?
If Planned Parenthood were what they publicly declare themselves to be, they would welcome transparency. We all know why they hide, because we know what they hide. We can confirm federal judges who follow the Constitution rather than reverse engineer their preferred policy outcomes. The truth about abortion is spreading because of advances in medical imaging, because of brave journalists, tireless activists, compassionate doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals. The rising generation of young Americans is the most pro-life in decades because they know too. And one day soon, we will reaffirm our nation's principles in their dignified fullness and avow once again that all men are created equal. All are entitled to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Suddenly still, and when you'd almost bet you could hear yourself sweat, he walks in. Eyes black as coal, and when he lifts his face, every ear in the place is on him.
Definitely a lot of truth in that particular verse. The sweat, you would sweat so much it would be audible. but, you know, hey, we didn't complain. We loved it. I complain now that I'm older. When I was a kid, the sweat never bothered me.
Well, a lot of guys your age also met girlfriends at those revivals.
Well, it's exactly where I met my wife. So, and here we are now, still here, all these years later. Well, anyway, let's get down to some issues, why don't we? Because I had a lot of fun last week, Keith. You know, last week was the first time in a while where the show just wasn't so jammed-packed with guests, which, you know, every guest that we've had on is deservedly so, but we seem to have a little extra time last week that we haven't had in weeks to really develop the issues and run through a good number of them. I went back and listened to parts of last week's show, and I said, you know, this show is really good. I enjoy this show. Well, anyway, I came across a poll this week that was very interesting. And you and I were talking about this at supper tonight. It was a poll by Morning Consult, which was the national polling agency, very establishment-oriented, and Newsweek reported the findings. And this is what the story reads. A new poll shows that nearly a quarter of Republican men surveyed said they have either a very or somewhat favorable view of white nationalists in America today, while a double-digit percentage of the GOP male voters have a very favorable view of white nationalist groups. This was a poll of 2,000 registered U.S. voters. It was released last week and found that among Republican-leaning male voters, again, 23% responded that they have a favorable view of white nationalists. 11% said that, again, it was very favorable. 12% said somewhat favorable. Now, here's something interesting. 17% of Democratic men in the survey said they have some form of a favorable view of white nationalist groups. Now, let's digest that and take it apart a little bit. Number one, even those of us who are on the front line don't refer to ourselves as white nationalists. I know that Peter Brimelow disavows the term because it is used interchangeably by the system media with white supremacists. Jared Taylor doesn't like it. I am a pro-white advocate, of course. I am an advocate for my people, but I don't think I've ever come up and said, yes, my name is James Edwards, and by the way, I'm a white nationalist, because, again, it is used as a pejorative term by the press. So we call ourselves different things. I am white and I am a nationalist, but let's not split hairs. So number one, even the leaders of this movement to advance the well-being and good of European Americans don't use this term. So the fact that nearly a quarter of male Republicans say, yes, I'm supportive of white nationalists, that's a loaded term that would shy away a lot of people. So the actual number of people who probably support it within the GOP and even the Democratic Party at 17% is probably well over a fourth or a fifth.
Well, you know, they don't use the word racist like they used to, because a racist is a principle and it could apply to someone other than a white person. A white nationalist has to be a white person. Likewise, a white supremacist has to be a white person. So they like those terms now, because the whole new theme of the left is that white people are bad news, period. All white people. There's no longer a box to be checked for a good white person. And this is what is sending the mainstream rhinos and mainstream Heritage Foundation conservative types in a tizzy, because they cherish their status as good whites. Now, the fact that you can get that many people saying that they would identify with a term like white nationalist is really encouraging, because that shows that they are becoming immune to the slings and arrows the left. Well, another statistic that really stuck out to me in that particular survey that you were talking about was that 66% of the Republicans in the South said they had a favorable view of secession. In other words, they thought secession was something that really ought to be looked at seriously. So that is, as far as I'm concerned, really another second good movement, good result of that survey. It shows that, as Bob Dylan said, the times they are changing.
Well, that's a great observation, Keith. And here's another thing to consider, is that with 20%, 23%, whatever it is, of the male electorate of the Republican Party, that's enough to get you a hearing. That's enough to get your issues a seat at the table. That's enough to turn elections. I mean, that is certainly a larger block of voters than the 11% of blacks nationally, or 13% of blacks nationally. So here's the thing, though. The problem is, these are people who will anonymously answer this question truthfully to a pollster, but beyond that, they have nowhere to go. They are not going to say this publicly, because they could lose their job, they could lose their scholarship, they could have their bread bowl busted, as you like to put it. And so it's not going any further than that now, because whites, of course, are the only group that is not allowed to have an identity. They're not allowed to have organizations that seek to advance their interests. Of course, you have media outlets like ours. You have some organizations in Europe, and you have obviously things like American Renaissance and VDARE and the other people that we so often feature on this program that are doing the work. But ultimately speaking, there's nowhere for these people to go, and I don't know if they're even aware of who they should be contributing to. Of course, any guest on this program would make for a fine choice. But so you have 20% of the male electorate of the GOP saying, yes, we're with you on the issues. That should be enough to do something with, but they're not organized, and they're fearful.
And we've also said that it may be a moot question now, because the left has learned how to win without winning, by means of cheating, like they did in the presidential election of 2020. But, you know, somebody told me earlier this week, they said, you know, I was listening to the particular radio station in Memphis and heard you guys, and said, I couldn't believe they were letting a station with views like yours beyond, but he was very supportive. He said, he thought that was great.
Well, that was actually, a listener that was driving through a couple, 3 months ago that said that, and he's been a long-time listener since then. Of course, we're allowed to be on because we don't say anything wrong. But
we should be allowed to be on, but he's right. There is a definite program out there to silence voices like us, and for that I say thank heaven for the Internet, because if it weren't for the Internet, we couldn't be getting the message out. Like, for example, back in the 80s and the 70s and the 50s and the 60s, you had a few newspapers like the Citizen Informer and things like this that people could... They put it in a brown envelope
and mail it out. That was about the only means of communication.
It had to be a thicker brown envelope than the pornography magazine you got because, you know, it was even more toxic to your reputation. But at least they tried to make it that way. Back then, there are a lot more people in the South, at least, that would willingly identify with the ideas that we are now. But things are beginning to change.
Look,
the best thing that could have happened to us, really, in some ways, is Biden's election, because the left has been overplaying its hand ever since. Now, if they actually pass some of this toxic legislation that they're trying to get passed, that could change my assessment. But right now, it reminds me of Napoleon's famous saying that when you see your enemy making a mistake, don't interrupt him.
Look,
you know, and that's what they need to. That's what they're doing. They are turning America off to progressivism and liberalism.
That's right. And Brad Griffin has argued that consistently since Trump's demise, is that this is good for us. It's galvanizing us. And you can't argue with the results. I mean, you can either believe, and we can't be hypocritical and say, well, we believe this poll because it's good news, but we disbelieve the other one because the media lies about everything, which they do. But let's just take this at face value. 20%. That's encouraging. I don't know if they apply themselves politically or extra politically, but that's enough to really make your voices be heard. That's enough to win.
Bob Dylan said, "The times they are changing."
We'll be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Mike Fortier.
The Taliban captures more territory in Afghanistan. The Taliban Friday seizing control of a provincial capital for the first time since U.S. and NATO troops started their pullout. The U.N. envoy to Afghanistan saying Friday the war has entered a new, deadlier, and more destructive phase. Schools are reopening across the country, but a federal official is open to closing them again if COVID cases spike. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona at a town hall in Boston Friday.
The transmission in the community, I wouldn't say the school, the community spread gets to a certain level, it may be best to have students learning from home. But we're going to do everything in our power not to go there. The kids suffered enough. If we follow the rules, use the mitigation strategies, get vaccinated as soon as you can, I'm hoping we don't have to do that this year.
Boston public schools are requiring masks this fall, but Cardona says it's also important to remember after-school activities pose a threat as well. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Alaruth for our newest sponsor, Asset Strategies, or ASI for short. ASI is a precious metals powerhouse. They sell gold and silver. Never in history has there been a more important moment to buy gold and silver. ASI has been in business for 39 years. They've served over 20,000 clients and sold $5 billion worth of gold, silver, and precious metals with zero complaints. Last year, gold saw gains of 25%. Silver nearly doubled gold's performance. Now Democrats are in charge. Green New Deal, open borders, free healthcare for illegals, bail out broke cities and states. The debt is about to go through the stratosphere. The time to buy is now. The owners of ASI, Michael and Rich Chekin, have been my close personal friends for 16 years. ASI is the company I trust when it comes to buying and selling precious metals. Call now to receive a free consultation and a free 1 ounce silver eagle with every qualifying purchase when you mention the Wayne Alaruth Show. Call 800-831-0007. That's 800-831-0007. Or visit assetstrategies.com.
The Biden plan is working. That's according to President Biden anyway. July's job numbers released Friday. Over 940,000 jobs added. The unemployment rate drops to 5.4%.
We're now the first administration in history to add jobs every single month on our first 6 months in office. And the only one in history to add more than 4 million jobs during the first 6 months. Economic growth is the fastest in 40 years.
The unemployment rate still almost 2 points above pre-pandemic levels, though, and we still have over 5.5 million fewer jobs than we did before COVID. 10 people stabbed on a train in Tokyo, at least one of them seriously injured, happening Friday night on a commuter train. A man in his 30s in custody. California now dealing with the largest single wildfire in state history. The Dixie wildfire crosses two counties in Northern California. It's been burning for over 3 weeks, covering over 430,000 acres. California fire officials say it's only 35% contained. This is USA Radio News.
Liberty, justice, fearless law of Texas. Man who chased the bandit coast to coast. Liberty, justice, now you've uplift us. Where are you, justice, when we need you the most? Some say you're a lunatic, some say you're a buffoon. Some say you're a fool with a gun. You never caught the bandit, though you stuck to him like glue. Now who'd have thought you'd walk away before the job was done? Cause you're Buford T. Justice, fearless law of Texas, the man who chased the bandit coast to coast. Buford T. Justice, now you've up and left us. Where are you, Justice, when we need you the most?
Well, that's a good question. Now, anytime my dad and Keith get together, it doesn't take too much time for the talk to turn to country westerns and their favorite westerns and country music and all of that good stuff. But tell us what we tell us what we were listening to just then.
That was Ed Bruce of Memphis singing the Ballad of Buford T. Justice, which was the main theme for the Smoking the Bandit Part 3 movie. And Ed Bruce was really a talent, and I love that music. I mean, that's great early 80s country music. Great picking and grinning there, I tell you what. Everything about it. And Ed Bruce was such a smart man. I mean, the lyrics to that thing are just classic. You need to really focus on
that's
them.
From Smokey and the Bandit Part 3.
That's right, which was not a very good movie, but that was the best part of the whole thing, that song right there.
Okay, now I know we talked about this some last week, but it's this resurgence of the COVID narrative. I mean, we were getting all vaccinated and everything was going down. The royal we, I guess, I don't know how you ever want to put it, society was getting vaccinated. And here's a couple of observations I had about that. We're going to tie this into immigration because there's a point here that needs to be made. When they first were developing the vaccines, they said we need to get 70%, about 70% of the population vaccinated so we could have herd immunity. Well, now that they've gotten 60% of all American adults, remember, children 12 years old and younger aren't eligible for the vaccine yet, but they've gotten 60% of the population older than 12 vaccinated, fully vaccinated. 70% have had at least one dose. But now that they're getting close to that original benchmark, they're saying the goalposts have been moved. And the narrative does constantly shift with this, but now it's 80 to 90% of all Americans needed.
I guess we're not dying fast enough from this vaccine or so-called vaccine.
Thing. Another thing is so-called COVID was around for a full year, and you had no variants, and now a new variant with society becoming more and more vaccinated, a new variant is dropping just about every week. We have the Delta variant, the Delta Plus variant, the Lambda variant, but here is the great disconnect that people need to be focusing on. And James Kirkpatrick of VDare put this out there, and he put it well. Really, he writes, there's not a better encapsulation of our system that the federal government deliberately imports illegals without bothering to test them for COVID and drops them off wherever, but wants vaccinated people wearing masks in their own house. Now, that's an excellent and obvious observation. COVID is supposed to be a threat so grave that we must force vaccines on people, force mask mandates and shutdowns, while simultaneously allowing millions of third world super spreaders to flood into our country without any restrictions whatsoever. This would be, if they were serious, a good issue, an excellent issue for people like Ron DeSantis and the GOP at large to run on and win on.
Well, you know, some things are more important.
Immigration. That is the one thing I'm not hearing the GOP talk about. Sorry, Keith, is why are they not using this COVID narrative to double down on immigration restrictions?
Because some things are more important than others. It's some ideas are more important than others. They think that flooding us with third world immigrants is more important than public health, but then the public health narrative is a phony BS too. Let me just tell you what the left always does and what they're doing, which is very obvious regarding COVID. They the left always wants to bend you to their point of view, make you do what they want. That's what happened in the Civil War. Basically, if you want to know what the Civil War was about, the Yankee abolitionists just could not forego the exquisite pleasure of bossing us around here in the rest of the country, particularly the South. Same thing with COVID. They want to tell you that this is the way you have to behave. You've got to take the shot. You've got to wear masks. You've got to do this, that, and the other. And they won't give you any rest until basically they've remade you in their image. And, of course, we see what the left looks like. Just turn on the TV and look at the people supporting Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and you can see why any reasonable person would not like to be like those people. But they are insistent. We have got to bend to their will. Basically, we're like Greta Garbo. We and our ancestors were, too. We just want to be left alone. These people will not live and let live. They've got to make you, remake you in their image, and if they can't, they'll kill you trying.
And the government has really, and the system media has really, really, really turned up the heat on people who have chosen not to be vaccinated thus far. And they can't seem to understand why this is. Well, the government and its regime media can't constantly lie to us about things like white supremacy and white privilege and peaceful protest and a panoply of genders and diversity being a strength and all of that, and then expect everyone to trust them about a vaccine. It just doesn't work like that. Boys could be girls and girls could be boys. We were supposed to accept all of this as truth. And then, oh, by the way, yes, take our word on this vaccine. And one of our listeners responded, Black Lives Matter riots and rallies were perfectly safe, and we've made this point before, too, but Trump rallies and anti-lockdown protests were super spreader events, according to the CDC and Lord Fauci. And this is the thing, Keith. The medical and the scientific communities have no credibility. If people don't trust them, they aren't going to listen to them. So it's not very hard to understand. Now, keep in mind that the CDC has asserted itself in recent months and asserted that racism, quote unquote, is a public health crisis and that the Black Lives Matter riots weren't events at which COVID could likely be spread. So again, their credibility is shot. Normal people don't want to be preached to by sanctimonious degenerates at CNN and articles like this, how you can pressure the unvaccinated, of course, is only going to make the people who are still unvaccinated be less likely to become vaccinated. Independent thinkers don't trust the media and for good reason. And I mean, that's just really all there is to it. I mean, how can you say you have a medical community and a scientific community come together and they will trim their sails to make science and medicine dovetail into what the prevailing political winds, whichever way they're blowing, with regards to genders and binary and 40 even different genders? You can't do that and then have people trust you when it comes to something like a vaccine.
Well, everything they say is wrong. If you want to know what is wrong, listen to what the left says. And the reason they call you names like racist, white supremacist, white nationalist, whatever, is there has to be something wrong with you if you won't submit to letting them call the shots and running society according to their vision. If you have an independent thought, then you are public enemy number one. That's the way that the left operates. You know, they were talking about Viktor Orban and Tucker Carlson going over to Czechoslovakia to Hungary, interview him for a week and talking about how authoritarian he is and how he violates freedom of speech. Give me a break. Viktor Orban could be Genghis Khan, and he wouldn't infringe more on the First Amendment right of freedom of speech, freedom of association, than the left does to us every day of every week of every month of every year. This is what the left does. When they're in power, forget the Bill of Rights. Just chuck it right out the window because the left doesn't want any other narrative out there. And the reason they can't tolerate it is because their narrative is so weak. It's so transparent. The rest of the world, like Viktor Orban's Hungary, think that America is now the epicenter of all depravity, perversion, pornography, everything that is evil and corrosive to the human spirit. That's what America stands for now, and we've had it all on display in the Olympic Games. I mean, look at, you can tell who the American athletes are. They're the ones with the rainbow colored hair and, you know, putting their fist up in the air and looking like and being transgendered. Those weirdos. That person is a weirdo. He must be a member of the American Olympic team.
Well, and Jack Ryan, by the way, will be back on to wrap up his 2-week coverage on the Olympics in the third hour. So we'll tell you all about how those things ended. And I think there's still a day or two left, but for all intents and purposes, they're over, and our coverage is over of it after tonight, anyway. So stay tuned to Jack in the third hour for that. But
it's really embarrassing to be an American and see these people that are representing us in the Olympics. I mean, it looks like the bar scene in Star Wars. I've never seen anything like these people. I mean, where did they dig this bunch of degenerates up to be the American athletic teams? Or are they making people do that? See, the way they enforce on the left their viewpoint is money talks and BS walks. If you want to have a career, for example, in medicine, you better go along with Dr. Fauci and the orthodoxy they've developed regarding COVID, for example.
All right, we're going to take a break. The first hour is flying by, as it so often does, as it always does, to be honest with you. A little more about immigration, a little more about the January 6th incident, and how the Democrats are using that, of course, as their ace in the hole. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Thank you.
favorites, Johnny Rivers, and we've had the opportunity to see him together in concert a few times. Now, that's one hell of a show. But let me ask you this, Keith. What would you rather have, COVID-19 or the rockin' pneumonia and the boogie-woogie flu?
Number two choice, absolutely.
All right. Well, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, January 6th. That's the one more thing we got to talk about here. So Pat Buchanan has a good column on this here in the last few days, and I'll read a few excerpts from it, and we'll let Keith offer the color commentary. Pat writes, to understand what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's Select Committee investigation of the Capitol Hill events of January 6th is all about, a good place to begin with is the sentencing hearing last week of Paul Hodgkins. Now, we've been talking about this. We talked about this last week, about how these hundreds of Americans, still hundreds more they're going after for loitering inside the Capitol, unarmed, of course, very little damage, very little vandalism or destruction of any kind. And they're in solitary confinement in some cases, 23 hours out of the day. They can't be bailed out as if they're some terrorist, which is, of course, the word that they're bandying about. A crane operator from Tampa, Florida, Hodgkins, 38 years old, pleaded guilty to a single count of obstructing a joint session of Congress called to confirm Joe Biden as the next president. Hodgkins entered the center chamber carrying a Trump 2020 flag. He committed no assault, no act of destruction, no act of violence yet. He was sentenced to 8 months in U.S. prison by U.S. Judge Randolph Moss. Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Monica Sedke argued for a sentence of twice that length, a year and a half, because, as she told the judge, quote, January 6th was genuinely an act of terrorism. But was it? Pat asks, was January 6th an act of terrorism of the character, if not the magnitude, of the Oklahoma City bombing? Hodgkins' attorney vigorously rejected that depiction. To call January 6th domestic terrorism, said Patrick LeDuc, is offensive and gaslighting the country. It was a protest that became a riot, period, and full stop. So why then, Keith, did the prosecuting attorney not throw the book at the terrorist? And why are Pelosi and the regime media, Pat now using the term regime media, by the way, doing everything to keep January 6th alive? What are the stakes involved? And he writes that the defense attorney is correct. January 6th, had it truly been an act of domestic terrorism, as the U.S. attorneys are claiming, she would not have accepted a guilty plea for a single nonviolent offense. So what are they using it for?
They're using it to deflect attention from their own massive fraud in the election of the presidential election of 2020 and for their blatant violation of election laws. They've been doing this ever since the Voting Rights Act of 1965. That was the purpose, basically to make it easier for supposedly black people to vote, also easier for the left to cheat, lie, and steal elections, which is what they were aiming at all along. Basically, they want everybody that has a pulse that is likely to be a leftist to be able to vote. And if they can't manage to get themselves up in the morning on election day and get there before 7 in the evening to vote with a picture ID, never fear, they've got the operatives that will vote for them. That's what they want to do. And if anybody challenges them doing that, well, then you're into voter suppression. That's the way that they want to do it. If you're talking about a real insurrection, a real danger in the Capitol, what about when the Puerto Rican insurgents killed several people and fired guns inside the Capitol itself and shot people back in 1954. Of course, I think it was the Clinton administration that let those terrorists out of jail because, you know, they're good guys. They're left-wingers, supposedly, or at least they were, against the United States of America. Then Chase Bowden, who is now the district attorney of San Francisco, that's basically refusing to lock up violent criminals or to keep them in jail. He's just following in the family footsteps of his grandfather, who was one of the founders of the National Lawyers Guild, which is the most left-wing radical outfit of lawyers, far beyond what was being done by the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and stuff. And his mother was Kathy Bowden, who was one of the Weather Underground. She was in that apartment in Greenwich Village on Washington Square that blew up and killed several people. She got out. Then she was with her husband. They left 14-month-old Chesa with a babysitter, and they went out and robbed a Brinks you know, armored car and wound up killing a couple of people. But because she is so well connected, her brother was made a U.S. Court of Appeals judge for the First Circuit Court of Appeals. That's up in the Northeast, by none other than George W. Bush. And because of all of that, you know, she got out. Her husband didn't. He wasn't nearly as well connected. And Chaser was raised by Bernadette Dorn and Bill Ayers, that, you know, wholesome American couple who are in the forefront of leftist change in America and big mentors of Barack Obama. So see, what is happening, you know, that, and they shot up the Capitol, too. Those people, that, the Weather Underground shot up the Capitol building.
The communists.
But, yeah, but nobody in the left, the left has amnesia about all these leftists that have done this.
Far worse, to much greater extent.
Much greater threat. They were actually threatening lives and, in some cases, killing people, but that doesn't matter, you know, because we had some guy that was wearing a goofy hat with the horns in it. You know, he's a much greater threat to the American nation than actual gunfire in the Capitol.
Here is, that was your answer to the question. The question is, why is the left so desperately clinging to their narrative of the events of January 6th? Rich Hamblin has a great answer for it, and this is a simple sentence, and it's packed with truth. They're using it to bludgeon any opposition into silence. Pat Buchanan answers it one other way. All three answers correct. But Pat's saying if they're not running on January 6th and if they're not running on COVID, what would the focus be on? In other words, if everybody wasn't focusing on January 6th in the media and on COVID, then you would have to look at the fact that you have the worst outbreak of inflation in a quarter century to hit the U.S. economy. And also it would be about the largest invasion of illegals crossing America's southern border in the history of the Republic. 2 million in 2021 is the projection. And again in 2022 with 300,000 of these gotaways who evaded any contact with the border control whatsoever. Now, I'm reading three more sentences here from Pat. Among the 4 million anticipated illegals in Biden's first 2 years, among the 4 million anticipated illegals in Biden's first 2 years are child molesters, drug dealers, and unvaccinated carriers of
COVID-19. In other words, good Democrats.
Right. And again, they're saying, well, you get vaccinated. Well, they're not vaccinating these people. These people aren't vaccinated. They've got COVID. They're coming in, and it's no big deal. The election of 2022, the midterms, will be about a wave, will also be about a wave of shootings, woundings, killings, and gun crimes in our cities that have long been governed by liberal Democrats. The Democratic establishment and its media arm, the regime media, have a vital interest in hyping January 6th and not letting go of it. For January 6th, 2021 is their last best hope for holding down power after November 8th, 2022. So you, Rich, and Pat are all right.
Well, what I think is, you know, COVID in particular is a great ploy on their part because that allows them to tyrannically govern people's behavior. They can say on election day that you have to stand on your head in a corner and spit nickels across the room in order to vote. And they can they can get away with it because they're getting away with it right now. What is really ironic, we were talking about this at dinner too, is that the group of people in America most likely to wear a mask now are the black community, members of the black community. On the other hand, the group most resistant and most, you know, non-compliant with the vax, get the shot, get the jab mandates, are the black community. So, you know, the left is walking a fine line here. The last thing in the world they want to do is criticize black people for anything. You know, they won't criticize them for murder and mayhem and whatnot. So, you know, certainly they're not going to hold them to task about not getting jabbed. But on the other hand, how are they going to get these numbers up in a place like Memphis, Tennessee, for example, where 65% plus of the population is black? The whole matter is just a tempest in the teapot, and everybody, you know, people that want to pretend that this is a major public health problem need to get a life, okay? Does this compare with the Spanish flu? No. Does it compare with even SARS or the polio epidemic? Back before the salt vaccine, not at all. But back in those days, did everything shut down? Did people just basically hide in their houses like it was the Black Plague? No, they did not, because it was not the Black Plague, and COVID is not the Black Plague. Look at the death figures. That's the bottom line. And the bottom line is death totals really haven't gone up appreciably over the pre-COVID era. So this whole thing is, you know, a bamboozle.
And, of course, you've got very few instances where you've got a strapping young lad who just drops dead of COVID. A lot of times it's older, it's obese, it's people with other
people
illnesses.
With comorbidities. And, you know, the Spanish flu, though, was cutting down those big, strapping young people, for example.
We got to take a break. Very interested to hear what Neil Kumar has to say. You'll hear from him for the first time in the next hour. Stay tuned. Radio Network.
You know where the